I'm just going to assume that all the K-State people that just left has nothing to do with the fact that Michigan State's ranked higher in the football rankings. I like the purple shirts. Thank you for inviting me. I want to thank Mark and Brian for putting this symposium together. I think it's great to get so many different views on a very important topic. I won't use the word vent because I don't think any of us are up here venting. I think this has been a very positive meeting so far, a session, and I think a lot of good hopefully will come from it. I am a geographer. Some of you know me, some of you don't. I come up to this point through the discipline of geography, and I see soil taxonomy as a means to make good soil maps, and that's going to be the focus of my talk today. Let's see. That's what I just pressed.
Enter.
There we go. Okay. Obviously, soil taxonomy is designed to group together similar soils into similar taxonomic classes, and mapping is the application of taxonomy. We've heard that mentioned this morning, and that's really my focus here today, is making better soil maps, because I believe that if we fix soil taxonomy or tweak it or whatever you want to call that, I think it ought to help us make better maps. One of the things that we worry about quite a bit in our department and my students as well is that we now have the once-over done, right, or mostly done. And I really worry that, you know, there's so many good applications we can make from that once-over data. Okay, whether it's applications for fertility or wetness or management or land use, and I agree also with Mickey, applications to land use and management or use and management must be central to any changes we make to soil taxonomy. We have to keep that in mind. And so there's a lot of potential to take the digital soils data that we have and make maps of applications. Okay, and we've done quite a bit of that at Michigan State, whether it's mapping parent materials or mapping fertility or mapping wetness or any number of things. But those application maps are only as good as the original maps. And we worry that a lot of those original maps were done, well, let's just put it this way, I don't want to be negative. They can be made better, and we have the tools now to make them better. Let me go ahead and focus on that today. Obviously, any soil map is based on the mapper's understanding of the five soil forming factors. And what the mapper obviously attempts to do at the local scale is focus on either topography or parent material. And therefore, let's see if I can go back here. Maybe I can't.
Backspace.
Really? Ah, thank you. what we see, and I think all of you know, is that a lot of the early mappers were working with limited base maps when they were trying to put together their initial map in the office, and they go in the field check that. That air photo that they used in some stereo pair glasses really wasn't a very good base map, and I think we have better base maps now that we can apply. And, of course, at that scale, at the county scale, at the scale of soil map that we all use, most of those map unit boundaries are based on topography or parent material. And so I would argue that if we understand the relief factor better, we'll be able to make better soil maps, and that's my focus today. Mappers go out, they develop some sort of mental model between slope, elements of slope, and map units. They put those initial breaks on an air photo, they go out in the field and they try and map them and see if they work. But there are mismatches. There are problems with those maps due to, first of all, a lot of those base maps simply weren't very good. We didn't have digital topographic data in the early days. They had air photos and a stereo pair viewer. But there's also mismatches between taxonomic units and geomorphic units. Really, there never was really meant to be that kind of connection anyway. We hope that certain soil map, we hope that soil taxonomic units match to certain geomorphic units, but really, oftentimes that's not the case. Now, we could fix soil taxonomy to take care of this problem, and I would hope that that, for some, in some instances, this is something we could do. My focus today is on this problem. We do have the ability now to make much better base maps and to therefore make better soil maps. Now, I don't know, I realize that this isn't necessarily a priority of the NRCS, but I'm going to get to that point a bit later. So we developed at Michigan State what we call a hill slope position model. My colleague and co-author Brad Miller, that was his dissertation research. And essentially, it's a quantifiable and repeatable method for identifying slope elements from a DEM or from LIDAR data. And we think it has very ready and easy application by any kind of field soil scientist or geomorphic mapper. The way we developed it was very simple. Well, it's simple for me because I don't understand it. Brad did it all. You take digital elevation data and a whole bunch of different algorithms to classify soils, classify hill slopes into one of the five hill slope positions. These data were then calibrated to transect data that NRCS soil scientists reported to us from when they were in the field walking transects. So we know that a big part of mapping is walking transects and taking spot checks. Here, for example, is a part of a county in Michigan where the soil mapper walked and at each of these points made a note on a note card whether they were on a foot slope or a toe slope or a back slope. And we took those data and entered them digitally, entered them into a database and compared the field soil surveyor's interpretation of that hill slope position to what our model predicted as a way to see how good the model was working. So we did this for Allegan County, Michigan. You see Allegan County right there with the A. And what's shown in this table is the summary data. This was the field call by the soil scientist, summit, shoulder, back slope, foot slope, or toe slope. And this was the model prediction. And as you can take a look at the correspondence, about two-thirds of the time the model got that correct. That's not too bad. Considering this is pretty complex and recently glaciated topography, or a lot of short slopes, a lot of slopes that really don't have all five of these slope positions. Of course, an important part of any model is can you extend it to other areas? So we went to two different counties in Iowa, applied that model as developed in Michigan to those counties, and here's the data. Again, about a little over half the time we got it right. So it's not a bad start. Here's the legend I'm going to show you, the colors that you see for summit, shoulder, back slope, foot slope, and toe slope. So keep these colors in mind, but I'll have that. I'll have this legend on the maps anyway. So how can this model help us make better maps? Well, the big problem we have is that a lot of the soil map boundaries don't match to topography. I think we all understand that happens from time to time. I think we can do a better job, and using this model can help us. Again, we had base map limitations when a lot of those maps were originally made. A lot of times we had different people looking at the serial photos and making different interpretations. That can happen. And, of course, there's disconnects with soil taxonomy units as well. So my focus here, again, is on limitations of the base map and how our model can help with that. Here's some Sergo data from Iowa. Again, I'm not picking on the mappers or the maps. This is, I think soil mapping is one of the most difficult jobs there is to do anywhere, especially in glaciated terrain. I tell my students that Eaton County, Michigan's, whoever mapped that county probably had it was probably the hardest, the most difficult job ever. It's the soils are absolutely almost unpredictable in that county, and a lot of Michigan counties are like that. But let's take a look anyway at what we can do. If in fact there's a priority from NRCS to make better matches of soil boundaries with topography, I think we have the ability to do that. Here's the Sergo lines. This is what our model would have predicted. And again, the model's not predicting where the soils change, the model's predicting where the hill slope elements change. Let's overlay the two, and you can see that there are some mismatches, that there are some places where we could have done better, some areas where things are just offset. And again, you can look at this little map for a while and see that, yes, there. If in fact the mapper had access to these kind of data initially, they might have made a better map. Show a few more examples. This is southwestern Wisconsin, a driftless area, highly dissected Paleozoic bedrock landscape. Really quite a nice landscape to use this model, very nicely defined hill slopes. These are the Sergo lines. Let's take out the slope phases and paramaterial breaks, and this is what we would see. And then we'll show you what the model predicts. That's what the model would predict, and overlay the two. So the Sergo lines, again, are the black lines. That's what you would find in the county soil survey. The colors are the model predictions. Again, you look at summits, are in kind of this red color. You see we missed a bunch of depressions up in here on this broad summit. And again, this isn't too bad, but again, I think there's some ways we can make these maps better if, in fact, that is a priority. Another problem that the early mappers had, or all mappers have, is the vegetation obscures the topography. Now, we notice that where the vegetation breaks coincide with topography breaks, the Sergo maps do a pretty good job. Here, for example, in Florida, you can see that vegetation changes in this area, lowland versus upland. You can see those clearly on an air photo. Again, I'll draw your focus to that, or your attention to that area. And this is what our model predicts. And again, the model showing the lowlands here where the vegetation is different, the uplands here where the vegetation is different, a very good match. But, of course, there's always the exceptions, where there's large areas of the same vegetation, but the slopes, the vegetation doesn't change as a function of topography, then the model could help us here. For example, here's North Carolina, some forested areas. I'll draw your attention to the upper part and the lower part. And again, the model shows that there's a lot of mismatch in these areas, a lot of small areas that were missed. Here, the lines don't appear to follow topography really at all. And the third application, a very popular one now, is disaggregation of map unit complexes. We're focusing here on map unit complexes that are drawn because of complex topography. We certainly could think the model could address disaggregation of such complexes in a very ready, applicable manner. Here's a couple of examples. This one from Louisiana, where it's very subtle and quite flat topography. We've got a number of different complexes, which we think, again, could easily be broken up with using the model. Most of these are foot slopes and toe slopes. Again, back to that spot in North Carolina. Again, we see we've got some complexes mapped in here. When you look at the application of the model, you can see there's great opportunity for disaggregating these complexes. And then one last example in North Carolina. This is mapped as a ridge swale complex. Here's what the model would have done. And again, this is what we see in terms of the Sergo lines laid onto our model. So lots of potential to disaggregate these kind of units using this model. And again, I'll point out to you that simply saying, well, we could do that from the LIDAR data alone. We don't need to apply the model. Well, I'm not so sure you can find the ridges and swales or the subtle topographic breaks there just by looking at the hillshade. You need the model, I think, to break those subtleties out. So again, if we want to make better soil maps, and again, for me, it's all about the map. I'm a geographer, okay? I believe in soil maps as a great resource that we're really underutilizing in this country. I think the maps are, a great, great resource, not only a geologic resource, in terms of not just the soil resource, applications abound. We're not doing enough in terms of applying the soils data, the digital spatial soils data, to real world applications. We could do more. Now, we could tweak taxonomy so that we can get better matches between hill slope elements and taxonomic units. I don't have a specific example of that, but we certainly could define certain series, for example, series definitions, so that those series are more focused in on certain hill slope elements in certain landscapes. Obviously, our focus here is a better base map, getting better base maps in the hands of topography, in the hands of the soil mappers. You can see some examples of this in our poster this afternoon. Again, how can we improve soil mapping? There's really three ways here. Can we do better? Can we get better matches between map unit boundaries and topographic breaks? I think we can. We can disaggregate map unit complexes as well. I think this is the most obvious application of this kind of model. And a lot of this can be accomplished with quite efficient manners. Again, it's the thing we worry about, I worry about, and my students worry about. They worry about it because I do. The thing I worry about is that we have the once-over data, and now it's fixed. And we're doing all this interpretations and applications and of the once-over digital soils data. And we know, it's like the king's new clothes. We know that there's serious problems. Any state soil scientist can tell you that county and that county and that county, the mapping is pretty poor. And that county is pretty good. And I worry that we're just going to accept these data and move on. Now let's that NASIS is driving the world. I mean, I'm not close enough to really say too much, but I worry that we've lost sight of the fact that we could do a lot better. With a little more effort, we could fix a lot of these lines. But moving lines does not appear to be a priority, and I would argue that it should be. And we have the ability to do this kind of subtle upgrades. And I think it could be done very quickly and very easily with minimal cost. That's my bias. That's my point. And in the end, I think we'll have better maps. And isn't that what we're here for? To have a system that allows us to make better maps. Thank you for listening. I'm happy to answer any questions.